My address this morning is entitled Suffering That Hides in Plain Sight. It considers how and why we so often avert our gaze away from the pain and suffering of others. We turn away and would appear to willfully ignore such suffering. In the parable of the Good Samaritan in the New Testament, a traveler is attacked, stripped of his clothing, beaten, and left half dead alongside the road. First, a Jewish priest and then a Levite come by, but both avoid the man. They pass to the other side of the road. The injured man's condition is of little or no concern to them. For both the priest and the Levite, the injured man's suffering is not apparent, goes unhidden, goes unheeded, is hidden, but hidden in plain sight. Have any of us ever crossed to the other side to avoid engagement with a situation where there might be distress, discomfort, or even pain to another? I certainly have. I'm not very proud to say it, and it has nagged my conscience. But we can often rationalize our choice in a certain way. We've offered help on other occasions. Let others do it now. Ignoring seems a very natural thing to do. But is there an underlying moral dilemma at issue? For example, we come out of a supermarket and see in front of us a young homeless woman begging. Do we engage with an interested hello and perhaps a donation? Or do we quickly pass on, reasoning that there are charities to cope with this situation? This reasoning can become more troubled and complex if we come across a tent on the street with a destitute person, or perhaps a refugee, living in it. On other occasions, we are asked to assist the victims of some catastrophe in a foreign land. Is this really relevant to us? The theme and title of my address are the result of reading a thoughtful essay by Eliza Gabbert entitled A Poem and a Painting About Suffering That Hides in Plain Sight. The poem was written by W.H. Auden and was inspired by a Bruegel painting. Both the poem and the painting ask us to reflect on how people often refuse to take notice and are indifferent when pain and cruelty happen. It's not my business. It's the way of the world. Anyway, life must move on. To give the poem some context, Auden was only 31 when he wrote the poem, Musée des Beaux-Arts, in 1937, but he was already considered the major poet of his generation. He traveled extensively, visiting Spain and China during the late 1930s and writing of the wars and tensions he witnessed. The preoccupations of his work during this period were social and political, the rising threat of authoritarianism, the evils of capitalism, and the fear of a wider European conflagration. In December 1938, he was in Brussels, where he visited the city's Royal Museum of Fine Art. He wrote his poem after walking through several rooms containing old masters' painting, including the Bruegel. The poem is one of the most famous ever written about a work of art. Here are the four opening lines. About suffering, they were never wrong, the old masters. How well they understood its human position. How it takes place while someone else is eating, or opening a window, or just walking dully along. Auden's subject is a painting by Pieter Bruegel the Elder entitled Landscape with the Fall of Icarus. The painting depicts a typical Bruegel landscape with people involved in many everyday activities. It foregrounds a farmer ploughing and a ship sailing in the nearby sea. At the edge of the canvas, almost unnoticed, we see Icarus plunge into the sea not far from the ship. But nobody seems to pay any attention to this amazing sight of a boy falling out of the sky. The farmer continues to plough with head down. The sailing ship that might have saved Icarus, I quote, sails calmly on. The painting, and indeed the poem, are a comment on the fraught relationship between attention and catastrophe. Something's only a catastrophe if we notice it. Can we choose not to notice? Can we become complicit in others' misery? Do we spare a thought for the suffering, or sail on calmly like the sailing ship in the painting? Elisa Gabbert, the author of the essay I draw on, suggests there is a moral imperative at times to look and to engage. Auden's angst about the 1930s Europe proved prescient. The Holocaust involved the industrial-like killing of millions of Jews. It could not have happened as effectually without the complicity of many people in Germany and surrounding countries. While explanation of this collusion is fraught, a film currently in cinemas and an Oscar winner captures chillingly the way many ordinary humans can rationalize their association with continuing cruelty. The Zone of Interest, directed by Jonathan Glazer, follows the quotidian and apparently serene life of the commandant of Auschwitz concentration camp, Rudolf Huss, and his wife Hedwig and their children. She runs the family household in a home situated at the very camp's edge, while he attends to the bureaucracy required for the mass murder of the camp's population. In the film, we never actually see the horrors inside the camp, just occasional gunfire and cries of agony in the near distance. The film's clinical approach does not attempt to find the why, but instead focuses on the banal how, on the mental accommodations made by the couple to ignore utterly the horrors they have nurtured, literally on their very doorstep. The female lead, Sandra Hüller, who plays the wife, has been praised for being able, I quote, to extinguish her inner life to portray the basic lousiness of someone who has fully normalized the sufferings of others. The Zone of Interest does not easily allow us to look away. When I was a very young boy, I remember my mother bringing me regularly to Dunleary on the 46A bus. We would pass an imposing institution on our way where my mother once told me bad boys were kept. Carrigaleia Park was, like Artane, an industrial school run by the Congregation of Christian Brothers. The Commission to Inquire into Child Abuse, also known as the Ryan Report, confirmed in 2009 that ill-treatment and cruelty did occur in these industrial schools. My mother, and indeed most of the population, could not have known the extent of this abuse and suffering. But a significant number of those in positions of power and close to power must have known and chose to remain silent. In the case of the mother and baby homes and the Madeleine laundries in Ireland, such complicity and indeed suffering were many times greater. We must ask ourselves why, in the face of cruelty and pain, do people choose to ignore, to avert their gaze and pass to the other side? Well, it's not my problem. How much is to be expected of me? I already have my own family and financial issues. It's the government's role to intervene. I am no hero. There is risk involved. And whatever I do will not change the world. The world is basically unfair. Now, these answers are not unreasonable. They reflect the reality of the human condition. Engagement with someone else's pain and suffering is very difficult for most of us, unless the someone else is close family. And if we begin to look like our non-engagement looks like it would become, will make another's suffering even worse, that we might become implicated, we begin to build mental walls to hide their pain from ourselves. We dismiss those with whom we don't want to engage as other, other spelled here with a capital O, in a way that suggests their humanity is somehow less than ours. We strip them of their full diversity and richness as human beings. We deny the plurality of their identity and feelings. Instead, we label them in a false, one-dimensional way as a hated, threatening other. We compartmentalize them as different from us, based on a narrow, single dimension, like race, ethnic origins, religion, gender, culture, sexual orientation, physical disability, and so on. It then becomes easier to normalize their suffering. Historians call this process otherizing or totalizing. The philosopher and political writer Hannah Arendt, her classic work, The Origins of Totalitarianism, published in 1951, explained how such totalizing thinking played out in the Holocaust and in the Gulag. Arendt's much quoted phrase, the banality of evil, suggests that evil is often not just carried out by tyrants and fanatics, but is facilitated by the everyday collusion of so-called normal people. Yet intriguingly, the place where Arendt finds solace and hope is in love. She came to believe that the most effective antidote to totalitarianism is to love the diverse reality of humankind and its world so much as to summon the courage to defend it. She wrote, "We like to convince ourselves that those thin threads of love are able to hold together what remains of our world." Claire Keegan's much praised novel, Small Things Like These, is set in a small Irish provincial town of some 40 years ago, where the Catholic Church and conservative values hold strong sway. There is a commercial laundry operating with the unpaid toil of girls and young women in the local convent. And this convent may also function as a mother and baby home. Whatever suffering that might occur there is quietly ignored by those of influence in the town. The hero of the novel, Bill Furlong, a coal merchant, married with five daughters, decides to challenge the status quo with an act of kindness, an action he clearly knows will have consequences. The story is, I quote, a moving reflection on moral choice, according to the journalist and writer Fintan O'Toole. To conclude, I return to the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus uses the parable not only to celebrate the Samaritan's compassion, but to argue that it is necessary to love your neighbor as yourself. For Jesus, our neighbors include those who might do us harm, even our enemies. If head-on love towards our supposed enemies seems overly difficult, we can at least try to understand them, to walk a mile in their shoes, not seek to otherize them, but to consider them as wonderfully diverse and sometimes flawed human beings, just like ourselves. If Jesus tells us to love our enemies, and the philosopher Hannah Arendt can recommend love in the face of the gulag and the death camp, perhaps it behoves us to try a little harder on occasions. Amen.